This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store with the new Squarespace Commerce feature. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK3.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 90, Automated Customer Service from Hell. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Matthew Rushing. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including a Borg invasion of Canada, the release of Enterprise Season 1 on Blu-ray, Art Asylum's Mirror Kirk and Enterprise Minimates, the new Star Trek Into Darkness poster, and the revelations from the new International trailer. Then in the feature, we're joined by Michael Fisher and Mariel Kiran to discuss the Enterprise episode, Dead Stop. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, everyone. Before we kick off the show this week, I just have a little announcement. I want to let everyone know that Greg has decided to move on and put his time into some other ventures, so he won't be with me on the Ready Room anymore. Longtime listeners know that Greg has been co-hosting with me for almost 2 years now, so we would like to thank him for his contributions to Trek FM and to the show, helping us make 80-something fantastic episodes of the Ready Room. And wish him the best of luck in his new ventures. And moving forward on the Ready Room, I'll be joined by my fellow colleagues at Trek FM. And this week I have with me my co-host from The Orb and Literary Treks, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, how are you doing today?
Doing really well, Chris. Had a really busy day, but it was really nice. It's cold here again for some reason, which is kind of strange.
Same here, actually, today. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I've had a great day. Got a chance to actually do some things that I don't normally get to do, which is just kind of watch a movie in the middle of the afternoon, which was fun. And so, yeah, I had a great day. How about you?
That's nice. Like you said, it's kind of cold today for some reason. It's been warming up. It's very springtime. The cherry blossoms are blooming, as we talked about, I think, on Literary Treks the other day. A couple of days away where I am from full bloom, but yet today it's quite cold. I mean, the high is like 12 Celsius today, so which isn't cold, but it's cool compared to where we should be. But otherwise, yeah, just having a pretty good weekend and looking forward to talking about some Star Trek news with you. And the first one, hard for me to believe, I have to tell you, is that William Shatner just celebrated his 82nd birthday on March 22nd.
It really is hard to believe that Mr. Shatner is now 82. Honestly, he doesn't look that old. And
he doesn't.
No. He just kind of has the vivaciousness of a much younger man, I believe. You know, every time you see him in an interview, he seems, there's so much life left into him. And I'm really excited for that fact because I've always enjoyed William Shatner. For the longest time, Kirk was my favorite captain. He was the man to beat. I've enjoyed him in so many other shows. You know, every time I've seen him in Boston Legal, he leaves me rolling on the floor laughing.
Right. Yeah.
Just so funny. What are some of your favorite shows that aren't Star Trek that had him in them?
Well, I remember watching T.J. Hooker in the 80s
yes.
when I was growing up.
Sliding across the front hood there.
Which was excellent. But, actually for me, it's some of his more recent work over the past, almost a decade now, which, gosh, that's, again, hard to believe. And surprisingly to many people, it's his musical work. A lot of people remember him singing Lucy and the Star with Diamonds and just weird stuff, you know, back in the day. The stuff he's done recently, in 2004, he released the album Has Been, which he did with Ben Folds. has a lot of great guests on there, Joe Jackson, Brad Paisley. And then a couple of years ago, maybe a year ago now, he released Seeking Major Tom, which is mostly all covers of rock or heavy metal tracks, which is also fantastic. The key is he doesn't try to sing on either one of these albums. It's spoken word, but with great music behind it and a lot of famous guests. That alone has just really impressed me with him, because I always loved him, of course, from Star Trek and other television. But that, his books, it's amazing the stuff that this guy does. And I think that's the key to why he still looks so fantastic at 82. He stays so busy, and I think that's so key as you're getting older.
Yeah, he really does. And as you were saying, you know, with his albums, he just has this insatiable vibe, you know, like I think that that's where Riker had to learn it, you know, you know, he just is able to ooze this vibe, especially when he's doing his spoken word songs, and it just makes women melt and men wish that they could be him. And so all seriousness aside, you know, Shatner also had some great performances. And for me, I think the pinnacle is watching him in Star Trek III and seeing death of his son, and which is just a fantastic reaction scene to the death of somebody close to you. And I knew from that scene, you know, he can be silly and goofy, but he also knows how to act and to do it well.
Yeah, I think the directors talk about getting that out of him, that sometimes it's frustrating him to the point where he stops trying to act, and then you get those types of reactions, like where he falls out of the chair when he learns that David is dead. But, you know, I was very happy to see on our Facebook page when I posted happy birthday to William Shatner, and I asked people to describe William Shatner. I was very happy to see that almost all of them were very thoughtful. People recognize what a great talent he is. And, you know, he's someone, a lot of people see him as an over-actor, see him as cheesy, but I really think he's one of the most brilliant entertainers of our time. And I'm glad he's still so active at 82. Wish him a very happy birthday. I know we all thank him for bringing Captain Kirk and Star Trek to life for us. And I'm really hoping that, you know, he's going to stay fit and continue to entertain us for many years to come.
Chris, I think he'll be around for a while. I can't imagine my life without William Shatner. Chateauitry just wouldn't be the same without the Shat.
Shat that. That's right.
Oh, goodness.
All right. So let's move on to some Next Generation stuff here. We've talked in the past about the Best of Both Worlds theatrical event, which I know you'll be attending, but that's been a U.S.-only thing. And now we have word that it is being expanded. The Borg are invading Canada on April 25th. So everyone, all you Canadians, you know, prepare to be assimilated on April 25th.
Yeah, I thought that this was really interesting move for the Borg. You know, if you've already conquered the United States, I guess really the only thing to conquer next is America's hat, Canada. Just pretty but superfluous.
All of our Canadian listeners just turned off the show.
No, in all seriousness, I'm really glad that they're going to be getting this, because this is going to be a fantastic event. Having the full theatrical experience of the Best of Both Worlds cut specifically for the theater. You're also going to get extended Blu-ray extra snippets about the Borg behind the scenes of this episode. And so this is going to be something really fun for fans. And I'm glad that they're extending this to our brothers and sisters and Star Trek fandom in Canada. I just wish that actually they would do this all over the world, and so that you could join in with us.
That would be nice, but I mean, I could understand why they're not. If they had this event in Tokyo, yeah, if they did it at one theater, they'd probably sell it out. But if they did it at multiple theaters around Tokyo around Japan, the theaters would be mostly empty because, unfortunately, Star Trek's just not really a thing here. But it'd be nice if they did it, you know, for the UK, for Germany, for some of those markets where Star Trek is big. But at least the Canadians are going to get it. It's going to be on nearly 60 screens across Canada. It's being brought to you by Cineplex and Front Row Center Events. And there's a list at StarTrek.com of all of the theaters, I believe, that are showing it in Canada, as well as a link to Cineplex.com where you can go and you can just double check your nearest theater and you can purchase your tickets online. And we'll put a link to those in the show notes so you can go in and click through. And hopefully everyone in Canada will enjoy being able to participate in this again and get set for the Blu-ray release on April 30th.
I'm really worried though, Chris. I mean, you've got the Borg. They're going to invade America. We're going to be assimilated soon. But I'm really worried the fact that they're going to assimilate in Canada. And you're going to assimilate those Mounties, those fantastic Mounties, and the world is just not going to be able to stand a chance. I mean, I'm just really worried for the entire planet. That's all I got to say.
What? It'll be really cool, you know, the Borg, the drones, they'll all be wearing those hats from now on. I think it's going to be great. It's going to be quite a visual.
That would be excellent, that if they inserted Borg into this special edition of this episode wearing the Mountie hats. How good would that be?
That would be fantastic. That'd be brilliant. All right, while we're talking about Blu-ray releases, let's move on to Enterprise Season 1, which on the day that this Ready Room actually drops, which will be March 26th, the Blu-rays will finally be hitting shelves, and Enterprise fans will be able to dig into the special features. We've talked about this release a lot on the Ready Room, so I don't want to repeat the same things. I did want to recognize the fact that this is release week for it. Also wanted to let you know that the Amazon price is still holding at $77.86, so keep your eyes open and see if it drops in the next day or two during release week. More importantly here, we wanted to point you to TrekCore, where Adam Walker has written a full review of this set. So, you know, if you're kind of on the fence about whether you want to get this or not, you can go over and read Adam's piece and find out a little bit more hands-on what these discs are like.
I was really thankful that I sat down and read this review today. One, this will be the first Star Trek Blu-rays that I own, besides the Next Generation films. And I'm very excited to be getting this. But two, Chris, I was reading through the conversations that Brandon Braga and Rick Berman have on this set, and just the candid honesty that they give us, and not afraid to ask each other some really tough questions about the creating of Enterprise, whether they killed the franchise, all of these kind of things. And so I'm really thankful that they are doing this. And from the way that he also described the look of the show and how good it does look, there are a few minor issues here and there with just the upgrading the effects. But on a whole, this set sounds like exactly what I wanted from an Enterprise set, and really just being about the extras and creating this show. So I cannot wait, and I am not sorry at all that this will be the first Star Trek Blu-ray season that I own.
Yeah, in his piece, Adam talks about uncovering a lot of the small, intricate details and props and the textures and the costumes that were not visible before, which, you know, Enterprise is the best looking, clearest show of all the Star Trek series because it was shot in HD. And so even though it was originally broadcast in SD, you can see it on Netflix. I have it here in Japan on Hulu in HD. I don't know what you're getting on Netflix in the States, but for me here, I'm getting it in 720p HD, not 1080p. So I still don't see all those little details. But Adam says those are coming through quite well. And he also addressed what we talked about last week, I believe it was, when you brought up the visual effects shots and, you know, wishing that they would have actually re-rendered everything at 1080p. They are upscaling a lot of it. But he says that, you know, most of it looks fine. Occasionally, some of the upscaled shots do suffer from some aliasing, especially on the hull of the ship, where there are smooth lines. You get a little bit of jaggedness here and there. But it's something that maybe you notice at first, but isn't really distracting. And it's still a step up from the DVD release.
And the other thing that I think about this, Chris, and I'm really hoping that it'll do, is it'll give people the opportunity to go back and look at Enterprise and be blown away by just how good this does look. Watching it today, as I was getting ready for our Ready Room, where we're going to talk about Dead Stop, I was just blown away by the way the set design really still works, how clear it looks, how good it looks, and just how well this still fits in our world today. I really like that. And all of those things just pop in HD. And so I'm very excited to be getting this set. I think it's going to be one of those things that as people watch this series over again, they are going to see some of its flaws still. But the more I watch it, the more I honestly fall in love with this series.
Yeah, I think from a set design standpoint, in a way, they had a bigger challenge with Enterprise than they did with the other series, because the other series, they are creating something that truly is futuristic. But with Enterprise, they had to bridge that gap between making it feel organic and real to us, a transitional period of technology, but still having that Star Trek feel. And that's actually quite challenging, because you are having to bring together two very different concepts. And I think they did a really brilliant job, and I can't wait to see it in 1080p. We also want to direct you to StarTrek.com. There is a blog post there this week from producer-director Roger Ley Jr., who's been working on this Blu-ray release. And he talks about, you know, the process and the goals CBS had in putting together the set. He also talks about a special feature that is on the disc called On the Set, where they dissect the making of one particular sequence from a season one episode, and they explore its creation from every angle. And Ley actually calls this the most insightful behind-the-scenes footage I have ever seen for a Star Trek series. And it never aired, and so fans now get to see this for the very first time. So it seems this is something that they actually had created in the past, but just, you know, as Enterprise was canceled and everything just kind of tapered off, and we just never got to see this stuff. And I'm very excited to see this.
It just seems like that really goes to show how the studio did not have a lot of faith in Enterprise. It seems like their faith of the heart was not strong. And that's
They didn't have faith of the heart.
Exactly. And that's unfortunate, because I think that if the studio instead had really gotten behind the show and done some of the things that it had learned with Deep Space Nine, of taking their hands off the reins a little bit and letting the writers go, let them really create, that it would have given this franchise new life. Because the ways that Berman and Braga did want to go, and especially the first season, I think would have at least been something very different. And it would have been more of a hook. I know it would have been for me, because I stopped watching Enterprise a little bit in the first season, and then I started back up again and got caught back up. But there was a little bit of that middle part of that first season when it was first running that it lost me for a little bit. And then I decided I can't miss Star Trek. I got to start watching again. And I had to get caught up and, you know, then of course watched through the end of the series and ended up loving it, at least until that finale that shall not be named, like Voldemort. So, but I mean, how could you not love a show that gave you Andorian fight scenes and we're finally going to get them in HD, Chris? I mean, I don't know how we haven't talked about that yet, but this is going to be the best part of this Blu-ray release. Andorian fight scenes that weren't cut out in HD.
How do you give up?
Never!
That's right. When Shran takes your blood to Andoria, you're going to see that blood in a way you've never seen it before. And the great thing about Enterprise is that Andorian fight scenes were truly integrated into the series. It's just a part of what the show is, and you got to love that.
Andorians finally got their due.
They did. All right. Well, you know, another thing that could have used more Andorian fight scenes is the whole mirror universe concept in Star Trek. Now, of course, DS9 is the series that actually developed the mirror universe, even though it was the original series that introduced the mirror universe. And when most people think mirror universe, they do think TOS, Mirror Mirror. And Art Asylum has put together a limited edition ISS Enterprise and a Kirk Minimate. And this is the Mirror Kirk. And are you going to be ordering this also, Matthew?
You know, Chris, right now my ship's budget is at zero. After getting the Enterprise B, E, and D in the last month, I don't really have the funds, unfortunately, but I really do love this. I actually got a couple of Minimates a few weeks ago, and I got a Ducat and a Cisco, and they are sitting on my desk at work, and I love them. I will probably be purchasing more Minimates in the future because, for me, they're my Kirk Bear. I think they're awesome. And this is a lot of fun because it comes with the Kirk sporting a scowling face and my favorite in the shirt, the sleeveless gold tunic. So, I mean, we've got classic Kirk here. You know, we just talked about celebrating William Shatner's 82nd birthday. There wasn't anything better than Kirk in that, you know, uniform, and just you knew you were up against a menace.
Yeah, well, I like all the mirror uniforms in general are quite cool. And of course, I especially like it when they did it on Enterprise because, I don't know, I like Empress Hoshi's uniform personally. But, you know, that's just me. I thought they could have done more with Porthos, though, Mirror Porthos. You know, made him...
I thought he was going to have an eye patch. And I was disappointed
that would have been
Mirror
awesome.
Porthos did not have an eye patch.
That would have been great. It makes me wonder, you know, what if you could have more mirror toys from Minimates, what would you want to have and what would you do with them?
I feel like that we need a Mirror Empress Hoshi Minimate, as well as the Mirror T'Pol and then the Mirror Uhura. I would really enjoy having those figures. I think they would be fantastic. I think they would sell out pretty quickly as well.
I probably would, but I don't know. If I put those on my desk, I'm not sure I'm going to get the shows out here. I'm going to be a little bit distracted by those.
Well, that's true. You might want to put them on a shelf behind you so that you can't, you know, of course, stare at them all day. Empress Hoshi, yes, quite lovely and distracting, mainly because the whole time she's trying to whisper in your ear things that you can do to take over the world, and that's very distracting.
And of course she would need to come with a small dagger so she could stab you in the back, right? Also, we need a Mirror Kira as the intendant, and if they did a whole DS9 line, there are so many possibilities. Mirror Vic, who we actually did see, and of course Mirror Morn, with the little button on his back that you press, and then he just talks nonstop.
Exactly. Or, you know, I was thinking Mirror Leda and Mirror Ezridax, Mirror Janzia.
So Leda, she wears like business attire all the time, right?
Actually,
there's like a pantsuit all the time.
Actually, I don't know if you remember the episode, but no, she was not wearing a business suit at all. She was even more provocative, if one can imagine. And so
Right, which is really not mirror, right?
No, it was...
I thought that was one case where they really didn't quite get the mirror concept down.
Yeah, the only mirror concept they did with her is that she switched which gender she enjoyed being with. And
right.
That was her mirror.
Well, this Art Asylum ship here has a couple of hidden elements to it. They're not really hidden, but the engineering section pops open and there is a hidden Jeffries tube inside there. And then the bridge opens up and reveals the Terran Empire markings on the bridge, as well as a removable captain's chair. So you can plop your little Mirakirk mini-mate down in there. And it also has an adjustable display base.
What in the world does Kirk keep in this hidden Jeffries tube, Chris? I'm not sure what goes in there. Orion slave girls or...
I don't know. It could be tribbles, maybe.
Oh, maybe that sounds like trouble right there.
Maybe Mirakirk is like a smuggler of tribbles.
Maybe he has the mud from the alternate JJ universe is with him the Jeffries tube there, because I would not mind riding around the galaxy with her.
That's like his bachelor pad down there in the hidden Jeffries tube.
It's like that Austin Powers plane he has, and he's got the bed that's got the circle and it revolves and all of that kind of thing.
That's right. Exactly. That's what's going on down there in the hidden Jeffries tube. It's a great opportunity, you know, because then, you know, like with Barbie dolls, you know, they sell different outfits and different accessories for them. They could do this for this Enterprise. They could sell, you know, different furniture for the Kirk pad down there in the Jeffries tube. You know, they could sell different drapes, little disco balls, little plastic drinks.
Oh, yeah.
It's a huge opportunity here.
Yeah, the different women that Kirk, you know, has over to the bachelor pad. Oh,
has like a 12-pack set.
Exactly.
Of mini mates, all the different
alien races that
Kirk,
you know, yeah.
Meets. Yeah. From all the different TOS episodes in which Kirk does have a love interest, they could have a mirror version of each one.
Man, we are giving them gold mines of ideas right now, Chris.
We really are. So we should also point out, this is designed by Art Asylum. It's available exclusively from Diamond Select and Entertainment Earth, and it's going to be limited to 1,000 pieces. Available in May for $29.99. And we'll put a link in the show notes to some more information on that. Matthew, let's take a break from news for a moment here and talk about our sponsor, Squarespace. Now, Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio. And with the new commerce feature that they've introduced, you can even put together an online store in just a matter of minutes. You can be up and running. You know, they've worked out a deal with Stripe to make it very easy for you to accept orders and process credit cards and handle all the different aspects of commerce. There are so many things that you can do with Squarespace. Now, I use it in two ways myself. I use it for my personal blog. I also use it for Trek FM, which is a very large site. And I use it for some other sites for clients that are a little bit smaller than Trek FM is, but still very robust sites.
One of the other things that I really like, Chris, is the fact that you can import seamlessly. You know, for me, I use a WordPress blog. And so if you're using WordPress or Tumblr or Blogger or Squarespace 5, you can easily import all of that content from those blogs there to help create your brand new blog on Squarespace, which I don't know about you, but I spent a lot of time setting up my blog on WordPress. And so I was really excited to see that Squarespace offers you this portability to just be able to take everything you've already done and to be able to move it over to your brand new blog on Squarespace. And then, of course, use all those fantastic tools that Squarespace gives you to make an even better blog.
Right. It's a great feature, too, because as we'll tell you, you can try it free for 14 days. They don't even ask you for a credit card. But you do have access to this feature during that time. So you can take your WordPress blog and you can import that into your trial site on Squarespace and see exactly how it's going to look. And then you can use the tools, like you said, to tweak it and make it your own, and then you can compare that with your experience on WordPress. And it doesn't even impact your existing WordPress site, so you can try it out. And this also works the other way, too. Squarespace makes it very easy that if somewhere down the road, for some reason, you decide that you do want to move off of Squarespace and go to another platform, you can also export your site from Squarespace and take it with you to wherever you go. So that's a both direction feature, import and export here. But once you're on Squarespace, I'm sure you're not going to want to go anywhere else. But another feature, we talked about this a little bit last week, is the ability to push content out to social media. It's great to create content, but you know, if no one knows that content is there, well, basically you're just writing for yourself and maybe a few people who know it's there. It's really key these days to get word out through Facebook, through Twitter, through Google+, Tumblr, very popular platform as well. And you can actually set up your Squarespace site to auto-publish your content to all of these networks as it comes out. So it removes that extra effort that you have to put in to promoting yourself.
And that's something that is really nice. You know, I don't know about you, but I really dislike having to, okay, I've got to go to Twitter and then I've got to go to Facebook and then G+ and, you know, make sure that everything is put out on all of the different networks every time I write on my own personal blog. And so this is really a great way to be able to share your content and do it easily without wasting an extra 10 minutes going to each different social media platform and making sure that it's presented the way you'd want it to be presented. I like this ease of use feature. You know, I wouldn't say that time is money, but time is precious, and there's no reason to waste it when you don't have to. And I like that Squarespace really makes it easy to create a professional-looking blog or website and easily promote it through these different areas without having to spend the extra time to go to these different websites to promote yourself. And that's just fantastic of them to make it as easy and simple as possible.
Yeah, and that's a good feature for businesses too. When we talk about websites, talk about larger websites, even if you have a lot of static pages, and, you know, say you're a company, say you're a technology company and you have products and you need to put product information there, you have support sections, you have download sections. But of course, these days you really need to have a blog within your site as well so that you have that fresh content that's coming out all the time, which helps, you know, keep you high up in the search engines. It helps bring people in to look at your product information. That's really important. But, you know, I find with my clients that it can be hard at first for them to understand the importance of this. But once they do, then there's that second challenge of making sure that you push that information out. And they, you know, often you have limited resources. So this feature is not just on a personal level, but for businesses too. It really helps your marketing. It helps you get the most out of your marketing, the most out of your personnel without spending more money and without spending more time. Fantastic features there. Matthew, we talked about the commerce feature a little bit at the beginning here, and it's really truly never been easier to start selling online than it is with this new Squarespace commerce feature, because it lets you add a fully integrated store into your website. And more importantly, it allows you to instantly start accepting payments. And accepting payments is the real kicker, because that's what has always been, as I've set stores up for clients, as I've set stores up for myself, that's the big sticking point that always requires research and jumping through a lot of hoops to get it set up and working.
Definitely, Chris. And along with that, making it very easy to manage your store really painlessly by managing the inventory, processing the orders, making sure that you get to be print out the packing slips, you can customize the emails. All of these things make it so easy to be able to run your own personal store and what you would like to sell on your website. And all of us, I think, would like to be able to earn some extra money. And this is a perfect way to be able to do that through your Squarespace website.
In addition to those points of the commerce feature, I'd also like to point out that you can quickly set up multiple shipping methods You can set up coupons, a variety of coupons, and a really big one, which actually can cost you quite a bit of money in having to bring in consultants to set up for you, is dealing with tax rules. This Squarespace commerce system will automatically handle the taxes that you need to charge on these purchases, because it can get really complex, especially in the United States, where you know each state, even each city, county, can set their own tax rates. You've got states like California where they have different tax rates that need to be handled for these online purchases throughout the state. That's all taken care of for you here. So it's just out of mind for you. The system does it for you. You can focus on making great products and selling those through your site. So we would like to invite you to try this out for yourself. Squarespace has been generous enough to make a special offer to Trek FM listeners. You can get 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts if you go to squarespace.com/trek and use the offer code TREK3. That's TREK3 for March. The pricing is extremely reasonable. There's the standard plan, which is $8 per month when you do the annual plan. There's unlimited that gives you everything, all the bells and whistles, except for the commerce features for just $16 per month. And if you want to add those amazing commerce features on top of that, it's just $24 per month, which if you're a business and you need commerce features, that's just a steal. I mean, you can't get any more economical than that. And when you sign up for an annual plan, Squarespace will give you a custom domain. They'll help you register your own domain if you don't have one yet. And they'll help you get it set up. And if you do have your own domain, it's very, very simple to switch that over and use that for your site. So go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK3. You'll be supporting our sponsor and you'll be helping us bring this programming to you every week. I've been around the world. Well, Matthew, it looks like this week with Star Trek Into Darkness, we truly are going around the world as we jump into movie news and rumors, because a new international trailer has been released for the UK, Australia, Mexico, Russia, Germany, and Brazil, and it brought us a lot of new tidbits about the movie.
I think that this is the trailer that we have been waiting for. You know, all those other trailers were the trailers we weren't looking for, kind of like those droids that got lost in Star Wars, and nobody could find them. These are the trailers that we have been looking for, to really give us an idea of what's going on behind the storylines of Star Trek Into Darkness. And I have to say, after watching this trailer at least 15 times at work the other day on my breaks, I am really excited. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, me too. I mean, I still think it's action movie in space, I have to say, but I like the fact that we're seeing a little bit more of what's going on here. We've seen that Admiral Marcus is indeed in the film, and he's being played by Peter Weller. I was glad to see that. It filled in a blank for us that we've kind of been speculating on as we read the Countdown to Darkness comics. And, you know, the one thing, though, is I read an article. It was a headline, I think, and it said that new Star Trek Into Darkness trailer reveals Kirk's vendetta. But I still didn't really get that in the trailer, because Kirk tells Harrison, "I watched you murder innocent women and children. I will make you answer for what you did." But that's not the vendetta that I've been feeling like they've been trying to sell to us previously, where it seemed like it was something really, really personal to Kirk, maybe in a family sense.
Yeah, in this sense, I think that the vendetta that you're going to get is Kirk going after Harrison because he has attacked his Starfleet family. And that's really the family mm-hmm. that Kirk feels like he has left. And that's all that Kirk has left. Yeah. And having something like this happen, you know, Kirk is going to kind of get slapped down a little bit in this movie, but you know, it also says in the trailer on one of those little title cards, a hero will rise. And I think really this is the fire for Kirk, where he's really going to be forged more into that man that we know in the original series we're all used to. And I'm very excited to be able to see that because, you know, Kirk is, in this universe, is a lot more of a loose cannon than he was before. And, you know, when he says to Marcus, well, maybe it should be, because he tells him that Starfleet isn't about vendetta. I think right. that's what they're talking about, maybe, because Kirk really does want to go after this guy and bring him to justice. So I'm really interested to see this. There's so much coming into this as well from, you know, the Countdown to Darkness comic series that I'm wondering how that's all going to play out, how the Klingons work in this. I mean, there's still a lot that I don't know, but this at least kind of laid out some groundwork, I think.
Yeah, the Klingon angle I'm still really wondering about, because as we see, a good deal of this movie seems to take place on Kronos, and it's hard for me to tell from what we've seen so far if Harrison has a connection to the Klingons or not. I mean, I don't know why he would be going to Kronos if he didn't. There is a shot in the trailer of Harrison from behind Harrison as he looks out across the landscape of Kronos. Admiral Marcus says that the man who did this, meaning the bombing in London, is, quote, one of our top agents. Now, it's not 100% clear if he's talking about Harrison, because if you remember in the previous trailer, we saw the man drop the Starfleet Academy ring into the cup, which that ring, as we know now, is a bomb. So he could be talking about that, but I do think he's probably talking about Harrison when he says he's one of our top agents. And then, of course, there's the line where Harrison says that he's better at everything. And today's Ready Room is all about Enterprise, and so we know the Klingon connection to the augments. And I don't know, you know, was Harrison a Starfleet agent who is part of some sort of augment program, as we've talked about before? Did he get mixed up with the Klingons? Is there any connection between the events in that Cold Station 12 set of episodes in Enterprise that Brent Spiner was on? It'd be cool if they were to source that. I just don't know.
Well, and it makes me wonder, too, was he on a mission to Kronos and then gotten captured and Starfleet left him there? And so that's why he's willing to detonate Starfleet and all it stands for, because that's the sin he cannot forgive. And the other title card here real quick is that it says, when our leaders fail, or something like that.
Right.
And so what is this, where their failure was messing with augment technology?
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point, because Harrison says that your leaders have committed a crime that I cannot forgive. And then, you mentioned that title card. It's very interesting. I think Carol Marcus is in this movie, not just because they thought it would be cool to bring Carol Marcus back, but because she's a scientist. There is something going on with maybe tinkering with science here, I think, and that's why she's there, because she does give Harrison that look in the trailer.
Are you sure she's not just in there to be in her underwear? I don't know, because, I mean, I agree with you. And I think that she's going to be fantastic in the film, and not just because of that, but she does give that look, and it does seem like that she is going to have more to do with this storyline than we've necessarily been led to believe. And you know, JJ said she's in the movie because she's important. She wouldn't be in the movie if she wasn't important to the story. And so apparently it's not just because she looks great in Starfleet undies.
Yeah, she's not in there just as an extra character, as an homage to the original series, like if they were to put Yeoman Rand in there, for example. I think she has a much bigger part in the story than what we're seeing in the trailers.
Well, and remember that teaser trailer, Chris, that had that room that looked like all these pods, that like sleeper pods?
Yes.
And so maybe she's a part of some kind of augment technology, and that, you know, we really haven't learned from our past, and maybe those are a bunch of sleeper pods that they found from the eugenics wars or something like that. I mean, who knows? There's so much that could happen.
So yeah, in one of the trailers, there's like that really quick snippet, right? This is not the really well done fake trailer that was out last year, but this is actually like a snippet. And of course, you know, we know from extras on the 2009 film that they did consider ending the 2009 film with a shot of the Botany Bay floating in space. So I think there's an augment angle on here. I really do.
Well, and I think this is also a great reason why you don't have to have this villain be Khan. It could just be their version of the augments. And I think really that makes for a much better film. Don't touch Khan at all. Leave him to the Prime universe. But do augments your way. And, you know, Harrison to me looks every bit as exciting as Khan. So far as a villain, he looks like he's got a well thought out plan. He looks like he believes in his plan, and he looks generally scary enough to bring down Starfleet. I mean, he's bringing ships out of the sky on Alcatraz. So, you know, I don't know what else you could say, but that's pretty scary.
Yeah. Speaking of that, they are really, really trying in this trailer to make you think that it is the Enterprise that crashes into Alcatraz, because there are so many scenes just before that of the Enterprise on fire above the planet. And that is the Enterprise that you're seeing above the planet. And then they cut over to it crashing into Alcatraz. I'm pretty sure that's not the Enterprise that's crashing into Alcatraz. The nacelles do look a little bit different. The ship kind of just looks like a somewhat smaller vessel than the Enterprise even to me.
Well, and if you freeze frame it and then just go one shot at a time, the underside of the engineering section is not at all similar to the Enterprise. And it kind of has a more boxy shape. So to me, the ship looks like an older ship that's, you know, around Earth, and the starbase maybe is just protection. And, you know, it's older and it doesn't need to be as high class as the new Enterprise is. But it does look like the new Enterprise is going to get a refit by the time the third film comes out, because she looks horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Practically destroyed in some of those scenes. So we'll see. You can see all the trailers if you go to trailers.apple.com. I think it's the best place to see these trailers, because they have a very easy to use list of every trailer that's been released. So on this new one, you can watch the one for each different country very easily right off the list. And we'll put a link to that. There's also a Bad Robot variant that is just slightly different. You can see that one on YouTube, and we'll put a link to that as well. The last thing we'll talk about here today in news is, in the international trailers, there are URLs hidden in the trailers that direct you to a new movie poster for Star Trek Into Darkness. And the poster is done in the local language of each of these. So English, Spanish, Portuguese, German, Russian. Interestingly, well, I'm not surprised, but while everyone else in the world does have Star Trek Into Darkness as the title of the movie, the Russian poster does maintain the title Vozmezdie, which is Nemesis. So they're not calling it Into Darkness in Russia. As far as I know, Nemesis was actually never released in the theaters in Russia. And so they're recycling that name. And, you know, what we're seeing of what's happening in the movie, I think more and more that title actually does make some sense in terms of just describing the film.
I really like this poster as opposed to the original poster that we got. I think this is actually a much better poster. I'm a huge fan of poster art. Our good buddy Tristan from To The Journey the other day posted a great question on his Star Trek question of the day. What was your favorite Star Trek movie one sheet poster? And, you know, for me, it's hanging up in my room. It's Star Trek VI.
Such an easy question.
I love that poster.
It's not mine.
What is yours?
That's not mine. Mine is the alternate Star Trek V poster that they did, where they had the theater chair floating in space, and it said, "Find out why they're putting seatbelts in theaters this summer."
Is that really your favorite? Because I can't imagine having that hanging on my wall. For me, part of it was just that I liked when movie posters were artwork. You know, the Star Trek VI poster, you can tell somebody painted that poster. And then, of course, they reproduced it. But it's a beautiful job. And I appreciate that so much more than this kind of Photoshopped world we live in, where all we do is we take the actors, we Photoshop everything together. It's not art to me. Poster art should reflect the movie in an artistic way, because anybody with, you know, half a brain, I think, can put together a poster. But the guys like at Mondo who do those really great posters or some, that's art, you know, that's like real that's art.
The only thing for me with this poster is I think what we're going to see, we're going to see several more posters, or maybe another one besides the one we already had before we get there. This poster is for the general audience. This is like, hey, look, here's an action movie. Come watch this. Because if you take the Star Trek wording off of this poster, there's absolutely nothing space or science fiction about this poster whatsoever. This could be a poster, you know, Chris Pine is playing Jack Ryan. This could be for that movie. You just don't know. There's nothing remotely Star Trek about this poster at all. And I think that's fine to target the general audience. And it's a nice looking poster. I think we'll see this, and then we'll see one that's much more science fiction and Star Trek to capture the Star Trek audience. And they will, you know, use the two different ones for their purposes. But this is the least Star Trek looking poster I can ever remember for any Star Trek film.
Well, and I think too, I mean, give us an epic poster that has, you know, the characters around a flaming Enterprise and really mad Harrison or something. I mean, just give us that kind of poster, because there's some vivid imagery from the film that would make some great artwork on a poster here. In the same way, you know, again, the Star Trek VI poster has the Enterprise getting fired on by two Klingon ships with this huge explosion on the background. And I mean, it's great art. So do that for this poster with, I mean, you've got a flaming Enterprise falling to Earth. What great imagery for a poster.
You want a flaming Enterprise in the background, and then you want Alice Eve in her underwear in front of that, right?
Well, I mean, I think that if you just probably put that as the poster, you'd probably get a lot of people, at least of the male persuasion, to this film pretty easily. But I don't think that we really want to market this film like that.
No. You know, I don't even think that's what that scene is either. You and I have talked about that scene is probably her changing because they're changing to leave the ship. And she's probably saying, "What? I'm changing."
Yeah. She's giving him that look of, this is the 23rd century. Get over it. It's underwear.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that there's any sexual thing going on in that scene at all. But, you know, they can use the clip in the trailer to make you wonder.
Yeah. I think Kirk gives her the double take. You know, he wakes up in this film with two Cadians, we know. So I don't think Kirk's lost his libido.
Stop.
We've all been on that long road and needed a place to stop over to rest. But, you know, I've never been to a rest area that was quite as pristine as the one that we saw in the Enterprise episode, Dead Stop. This was an episode that was kind of unique in Star Trek visually and also carried over some nice continuity. And today we're going to talk about this episode, and to help us do that, we have with us first time on the Ready Room, Trekka Films News editor, Mariel Kiran. Mariel, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi.
And also we have back with us, after only a couple of weeks hiatus, Michael Fisher, who apparently is still chomping on that cigar from our Little Green Men show.
You know, when a cigar is sufficiently dense and full of lovely joy. I don't know. Yes, I'm back. I'm back, and it's lovely to get back. I can't complete that sentence in a non-naughty way. Hi, guys. Lovely to see you.
Welcome back, Michael.
All right, 2 seconds in, and we're already there.
Yeah. All right.
You're welcome.
Well, let's jump in. It's Enterprise Week, which I always enjoy when we finally get to Enterprise, even though we have a few listeners who think that it goes from Voyager directly to the original series, but nope, there's another series in here, a very good series called Enterprise. And the episode which we picked today, which Michael, you chose, Dead Stop, is one of my favorite Enterprise episodes as well. Michael, why don't you lead us in as you chose this episode?
I would love that. Actually, you've just made me realize, Chris, I think this is the first time I've chosen an episode for us to discuss, and I really thank you for the
that might be right.
for the chance to select that. So thank you. I remember Dead Stop because it was one of the shows that I think Enterprise is really fun to talk about because it is the most recent of the Star Treks that was televised, and as a result, I think for everyone, no matter how old you are or aren't, it is the series that you probably remember watching the best, because it's the one that was the most recent. So I can remember exactly how I felt during certain episodes, watching them for the first time on UPN. And Dead Stop is one that stuck with me initially. I mean, it stuck with me right away. As soon as the episode finished on its first airing, I was like, you know, that's awesome. This is not it's like the essential sci-fi adventure. You know, they're poking around a mysterious space station. You got Trip and Malcolm kind of going rogue. You got all these kind of things that are fun. It's just kind of freaky space nonsense in the way that Star Trek does really well. And it's not terribly ambitious, and it's not really trying to send a message, but it doesn't need to be. And I think that's it. You know, it sets kind of a narrow focus, and it accomplishes what it sets out to do, which is to be the space haunted house story.
Yeah, it's got that kind of classic sci-fi feel to it as well with the station. It's very 2001-ish. If that's a word.
Especially in visual design, yeah.
Visual design.
They Absolutely. Walk in and I thought, wow, this looks like some of those sets from the motion picture as well. Just that kind of stark, you know, it's very white, off-white look. And then, of course, you know, the only thing you can think with that computer is how. I can't do that, Dave.
Yeah.
You know,
luckily no
episode.
One was waiting there to greet them wearing too much junk uniforms, though.
Oh God! Yeah,
the TMJ jumpsuits. Yeah,
yeah. I'm really glad that didn't happen. It probably would have ruined the episode if they, you know, those doors had opened the first time and there's somebody standing there with just too much junk.
Got that belt cinched up. Yeah. Mario, what did you think about Dead Stop the first time you saw it?
I like the episode. I think it's a really great episode. I think it does actually have a bit of a message, and it's our reliance on technology. Is it a good thing or not?
I think that's something we started talking about on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
Kind of initially. Well, there is a little gem, a little nugget of a message in here. Was it you, Matthew, who was talking about call centers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Mariel mentioned that too. Yeah.
Actually, and from a temporal perspective, when this episode aired, and I think it was about, 2003, guys, 2004, something like that, I remember that being a really, really, really difficult time for customer service. Like, because at that time, Sprint, who I was about to start working for, had just implemented this policy of charging $3 every time you wanted to talk to a person. If you didn't want to deal with their automated system, you would have to pay.
It sounds like the U.S. Embassy in Tokyo, only you don't have an option. You can't talk to a person. You have to pay a few dollars per minute to get any really? Information from Citizen Services. Yeah.
Wow. And that's still the case today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, I just remember it peaking at around the time this episode like came out because it was just heinous. I mean, it was so difficult to talk to a real human. And you see that happening with Archer just over and over again where he comes in. He's like, one of my crew members is dead. And the space station's like, don't know what you're doing. It's not a valid inquiry. You know, it's mind boggling. He even says at one point, I want to talk to a person. Which I think about 17,000 people scream into telephones every
Well, for me, it was, there's that shot of him. It's from the backside of the screen. And it's basically him. You know, one thing that those automated systems train you to do is just to start jabbing zero as soon as the menu yes. start, because you can overload yes. the system and it will just kick you over to yes. a person. That's like Archer's there is jabbing zero. Tell me what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, it is one of those things, too. I mean, you know, I've noticed, too, that, you know, even if you get to a person, it's almost never helpful. Like, the person that's on the phone can't really help you with your question, whatever it is. And so you just kind of get bounced around for the next 3 hours, hoping to find the answer. And to me, it just reminded me of the frustration of dealing with these huge corporations that don't have anybody who can actually do anything. You know, it's just all the corporate answer, a bunch of BS, and you just end up completely frustrated, you know, and it's no reason people are, you know, sick and tired of it. You know, every time you have to call somewhere, it immediately gives you a huge anxiety headache. And I think it's funny because in this episode, that kind of starts with Archer from the beginning. Like, he's really not comfortable with this at all. And he's the only one. From the moment they kind of step on that station, there's nobody really to talk to. You can kind of see that tension line and his, you know, temples right here start to just kind of bulge out. Like, this isn't okay. And it just gets worse, obviously, once Mayweather dies. Or, quote unquote, dies.
Right.
Spoiler alert.
Well, let's jump into some main points here. The first one that I wanted to talk about was continuity. I think Enterprise, of course, season 3 with the Zindi arc is all about continuity. I kind of dismissed that season because I think that season within Star Trek is kind of an outlier that was put together, I think, kind of for ratings reasons. But in the fourth season of Enterprise, we get a lot of continuity because we get a lot of 3-episode arcs that go on. In the first two seasons of Enterprise, we get a little bit of continuity, but not as much as we get in this episode. You know, in this episode, we're having a direct continuation from Minefield, both in terms of the ship being damaged and Reed's leg injury that occurred. So just talk a little bit about what this episode maybe means to you in terms of Star Trek storytelling and Enterprise.
I think this is a direct reaction to the crap they gave us on Voyager, where 1 week the ship would be damaged and the next week it would be pristine again, that they wouldn't even right. touch that something had happened, you know, last week. Oh, Harry Kim died last week. It's fine. He's not seeing a counselor. He's good. He's still an ensign.
You know, the character things like that didn't bother me as much as the ship did. And it's not just Voyager. I mean, this happened on all the series where it also happened on the Dukes of Hazzard.
Just a good old boy.
You notice how the General Lee would be really, really damaged and they'd go to commercial and when they would come back, it'd be completely fixed. I mean, Cooter, you give that guy like 90 seconds of commercial time, he can fix anything.
Straight in the curve, yeah. Flying in the hills.
Well, it's what made me glad that, you know, this never happened in Bosom Buddies. So, you know, I didn't have to worry about that at all on that show, so.
Yeah, no, it was very... It's a good point. it was refreshing, though, to open up on this episode and see the establishing shot is, first of all, a really good effect shot. But more importantly, it's, yeah, there's still a big bite-sized chunk taken out of the edge of the saucer section. And Reed and, excuse me, Malcolm and Trip and Archer are out there taking a look at it in the inspection pod. And, you know, they've discussed this in the commentary on the DVD where it was a direct reaction to that kind of like, ship's broken this week, it's not broken this week. There's more continuity in this episode, too. There's even an explicit callback to the pilot when the space station indexes all the damage on the ship and Trip's like, hey, check it out, that where I scratched the paint. They found that. And I do love that little interaction with them. And Archer's like, I thought you were going to repair that. Trip takes this deliciously long beat. And he's like,
I'm getting to it.
I was getting around to it.
And also the time frame is correct there, too. You know, they're referencing themselves and they are making sure that the time that has passed since that moment in Broken Bow is actually accurate.
Well, and they're even in that little inspection pod, you know, and that's what happened in the original pilot episode is that they're in the inspection pod. They're showing off the Enterprise for the first time, kind of harkening back again to the motion picture, you know, flying around the Enterprise and getting to see it for the first time. And I just liked that they thought, hey, well, what if they just carried this around all the time? Because you might need it. And it does come in handy.
And they also didn't lowball the repair estimate, too. Like Star Trek will often play low stakes as a little bit higher. They'll be like, how long for repair? And they're like, 5 days. And people are like, oh, God, that's going to set us back. No, they were like 3 or 4 months for repair. And then, you know, they had a maximum speed as a result of Warp 2. And so they were a decade away from Jupiter Station. Like, that's setting up some really powerful stakes right at the top of the episode. It's like, man, we got to send out a distress call. And that's pretty cool to see.
And that brings to something that Mariel pointed out, which was the potential of the series representing the risks to deep space exploration, because they are going to be so far away and there's no margin for error. They, you know, here they get damaged by a mine and they are potentially stuck, like you said, Michael, a decade away from getting back to Jupiter Station. So, Mariel, what about this setup that you were talking about?
Well, it just really, I think, represents what Enterprise is about to me. With just the inherent dangers of going on such a mission, you know, they don't know what they're going into and they're taking that risk upon themselves, you know, in the name of advancing us. I really like that about Enterprise.
I think it was really smart because to what you said, Michael, by doing the, you know, this is going to take 3 to 4 months to fix, also is showing us just how not advanced they are compared to, say, the 24th century, where, yeah, this will take like 5 days,
absolutely,
you know, because, yeah, they can replicate everything. And it's not that hard, you know, industrial replicators make it go like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is the kind of place still where you're going to have to manufacture a lot of these parts. And there aren't any other NX class starships right now, except for Columbia, which I think is being built at this point still. So, I mean, you know, this is really new for them. And I think Mariel's right. This sets up the danger that they're in, but just the, I think the specialness of what Enterprise is doing right now. And this episode does that really well.
I don't think we've really seen it until now. And that it's the second season. It's kind of late to be setting that up.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they didn't play that up as much in the first season as they possibly could. I think they did a good job of presenting the unknown in the first season and how people would react to that. But from a technological standpoint with the ship, perhaps it was still a little bit tried and true Star Trek, more often than not up to this point. And they're not that far away from Earth, really, because the ship can't go that fast, maximum warp 5. So, you know, it's not like they're in the far reaches of the galaxy here, but yet even this type of damage can pretty much put an end to their cruise.
I like that they do that, though, because it does feel like they're in the middle of freaking nowhere. And I mean, when we think of, you know, the Federation in the 24th century and how big it is and just how vast it is, you know, yeah, Enterprise isn't that far away. But for them, they're like, you know, as far away as anybody has ever. I mean, it's like Sam in The Lord of the Rings, where he's like, if I take one more step, this will be the farthest from home I've ever been. And every, you know, light year that they go is the farthest from home that a human has ever been. And this is the kind of episode that you know, I love Enterprise, but if they had had a few more of these in those first two seasons to kind of really, like Mariel said, kind of give you those stakes and continue to build them, wow, we would have had, you know, a fantastic show that I think fans would have just gobbled up.
And not just geographically speaking in terms of space, but Enterprise is charting new, you know, it's exploring new corners in terms of equipment and in terms of technology and things like that. You know, in almost every Enterprise, every episode of Enterprise, we're treated to a shot of a shuttle pod or a baseball cap or something that reminds us that this is NX-01. You know, this is still an experimental craft. It is, as someone once recently referred to the U.S. space shuttle, it is a test craft that everyone hopes still works the next time. You know what I mean? Like they're really in this kind of cobbled together thing. So I think if Enterprise had managed to hold on to that, the sense that this episode really does very nicely of like, wow, we're dealing with things that we've never dealt with before, it could have been more consistent overall. And that's another reason I really like this episode, because I think it stands as a mark of what Enterprise could have been.
Yeah, I also like Porthos's dog collar. Has a little tag that says NX-01 on it to help just remind us.
Just in case he gets lost.
In case found, yeah.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, please call Captain Archer at 555-5555.
O-1.
O-1. That's right. Let's talk about, I see a little bit of naivety here. I'm thinking about the fact that I can certainly understand Archer's thought process when he says that they've done a lot of favors for other people. It's time for someone to do a favor for them now. And so he puts out this distress call, and I kind of felt a little bit like it was a good setup for the show, because it is showing, yes, humans are new out here. Maybe they're not quite as scared of the galaxy as they maybe should be, you know, like maybe Q would tell Picard that you don't know what's out there. You know, it's a dangerous place. There's a little bit of naivety here, I think, on the part of Archer of just putting out this distress call and just kind of trusting whoever comes along, even though maybe he didn't really have a lot of choice here. Did you feel that, and you guys talked about in the other side of the room,
the other side of the room,
that Archer is suspicious here as opposed to T'Pol. And of course, the rest of the crew, I noticed, seems to think everything's perfectly fine. You know, Chirrup has no problem just digging into space catfish that is provided to him by some odd space station that he's never been to before. But Archer does get a little bit suspicious. But at first, it felt even still maybe a little bit too trusting of things.
I think it's one of those things where they set up how bad this is. And T'Pol tells, you know, Archer, and of course Chirrup agrees, look, we don't really have a choice. We will sit out here and, you know, we can start heading home and hopefully somebody will catch us, you know, as we kind of radio in. I mean, their subspace transceiver is down, so they can only call locally, which is pretty bad.
Yeah, it's also cheaper.
Yeah, it really is. The rates are just so much better. Texting subspace, oh my gosh, it's
forget it,
it's a royal ripoff. but yeah, so I think they did a great job of setting up that they don't have a lot of options. I really liked in this episode though that from the very start it is Archer who is suspicious, and I feel like you can tell that he's learning, especially after last episode with what happened in Minefield. Their kind of naivety really got to them and, you know, led them into a minefield, and they almost lost the ship. They almost lost Reed and Archer. Luckily, hull plating is really strong, and they were, you know, able to survive that really big explosion from that mine, which is a whole other episode. But I just really liked the fact that from the beginning, they're showing that Archer is really growing as a character. And he's going to do all the options he can to keep his crew alive. And that's the other thing that really comes out in this episode. You know, don't mess with Archer and his crew, because you will not like the results when you do.
Yeah, agreed.
Do you think that part of T'Pol's trust was, well, she tells Archer that the Tellarites are generally trustworthy. So the fact that the Tellarites responded to her, which I kind of wonder, I mean, I don't know the capabilities of the space station. It crossed my mind about whether or not that actually was a Tellarite freighter responding to them in the first place, or if it was the station that had already scanned them and was sending out a garbled supposed Tellarite transmission in order to gain their trust. But that's just my speculation. I think it probably was intended to be an actual Tellarite freighter in the story. But that maybe that helped T'Pol to not be quite so suspicious.
That would increase the creep factor of the episode about 40-fold if it was the space station getting all intelligent in that regard. I don't know if that would work considering their local calling.
Well, it's not unprecedented to see something like that in Star Trek, so...
No, it's not. I think it would have been more challenging to make it work with the science of the episode, though, considering their long-range array is down and, yeah.
Right.
But I mean, then again, the station could very well have buoys, you know, just out there, like sending ships to it.
I just really like Chris's idea. I think that makes this episode 20 times better to think that it wasn't a Tellarite freighter because, you know, as we see at the end of the episode, that station is putting itself back together. So it is apparently very self-sufficient. And whoever built that thing, that's crazy. And so... I don't know, Chris. I think there might actually be something to that idea.
Yeah.
But I did like the fact that we actually heard about Tellarites for the first time, I think, in Enterprise. Mm-hmm. Or at least, you know, we've maybe heard about them before, but, you know, Archer at least has to ask again, who are these Tellarite guys and should we trust them? Which is kind of sad because we really should have seen them beforehand. This is the kind of thing that Enterprise should have been doing, not in the fourth season, but like in the second season.
And it's not the only T species we get mention of in this episode. We hear that the Tarkalians have developed replicator technology as well. Uh-huh. It was nice to see that the Enterprise, kind of Star Trek, throwing a bone to itself. And it's like, yes, Tarkalians are not only known for their T. Yes.
And we see, not a mention, but visually, we actually see a Cardassian in this episode as well.
What? Is a Cardassian one of the zombies?
Yep. There's a Cardassian, a Vulcan, I believe a Klingon.
There's a Klingon?
Yeah, mm-hmm. In there. Mm-hmm. Why didn't they kidnap Porthos and hook him up to that core?
Well,
that's a good question.
It's a good thing they didn't, because he's the smartest person on Enterprise. And so, I think Porthos's brain probably could have just run that entire station without all those other aliens.
Right.
Yeah, I could just see, like, if they hook Porthos's brain up to that, the next time a ship comes there, listed on the screen as possible compensation options would be 5 pounds of cheese.
Yeah.
Thirty-five bags of doggy treats.
Yeah, I think you'd go for the cheese. So, but Archer does get suspicious, which is good. Did you find it odd that here in the second season, especially because in the first season we've seen the characters portraying the both sense of wonder and sense of fear at times of the unknown? Did you find it odd that the whole crew is just sitting around eating and everyone's just like, it's perfectly normal to find an unmanned space station that makes us anything that we want?
Well, to be fair, Travis did express concern about the arm grabbing hold of the ship, and Archer said it was okay. So they're kind of taking, you know, their lead.
That's okay.
From
don't
their
worry
captain.
About that arm. No problem there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like when things grab my ship.
Don't worry about the man behind the curtain. It's fine.
Right. Pay no attention.
Well, okay, so technology. We got to see several Starfleet technologies that we take for granted in this episode before Starfleet actually has this technology, and I thought that was quite cool.
Yeah, we get to see the very well-placed food replicators in the center of a table, which I think just makes all the sense in the world, by the way. We've never seen Starfleet. We've seen Starfleet have enough technology to come up with a replicator that fits in like a food slot on the wall. But to my knowledge, we've never seen a table on a Starfleet vessel that has a replicator built right in, which just makes so much more sense, doesn't it? So
really
I'm going to sit
does.
Down at table five and just like, I want tea. And then it's right there in front of you, or cold water or pan-fried catfish. Hey.
What would you ask for? Okay, so Trip wants pan-fried catfish. Michael, what would you ask for on this station?
Well, it's a good question, right? Because you have to determine that it's something that chef can't prepare. It's something that's not packaged aboard the ship in a ration pack or something like that. And so it would have to be something pretty rare. And I mean, for some reason, I don't think an Enterprise shipped off with a whole bunch of Velveeta shells and cheese. I feel like that would have gone like in the first month, right? So I would definitely ask for that. And I think it could whip that up pretty quickly because there's only about 14,000 ingredients in that cheese substitute. So you're right.
I think if the replicator can make the complex drink of a single malt scotch and do that well, then I'd trust it to make me anything. So I'd start with that. And if it's good, you know, because I don't think they have that on the ship. You know, I don't think Chef is storing that under the counter or something on Enterprise. And so they got some ales and some beers, obviously, because, you know, Trip and Archer drink those every once in a while. But yeah, good liquor, probably not around.
Mine's pretty easy. I would ask for an Arby's roast beef sandwich with extra barbecue sauce.
Nice. Yes.
Oh, you do love your big beef and cheddar.
I've gone so many years without having an Arby's roast beef sandwich because, you know, I just can't get that in Japan. And they won't respond to me on Twitter. I keep asking them, when are you going to open an Arby's in Japan? And they just ignore me. So
these jerks. That's not how you're supposed to do social media.
Jeez.
Let me enlist. I'll retweet you, Chris. Enlist my aid.
Thanks. I'm sure when Captain Two Phones asks for a roast beef sandwich, he gets results.
Yeah. Yeah. This is important.
Like, he's going to get three show up on his front doorstep tomorrow.
He's going to get the Arby's gold card. Free roast beef anytime you want, any location in the 48 contiguous United States.
That's what I'm here for.
What would you order, Mario?
Tomato sandwich. I know it's southern, but whatever.
Maybe fried green tomato sandwich. Ooh, that would be.
No, I've never had that. I don't have any desire.
It's good.
So just like a tomato sandwich, just like tomatoes on bread. Is that what we're talking?
It's toasted and mayonnaise and salt and pepper and tomato. Fresh.
Down with that. Yeah, that'd be.
It's really good. You should try it.
Chip would probably dig that.
Ooh, little. What about a little basil? Does that come on there too? Or
God, if you're gonna get fancy.
Okay, well, I'm getting fancy. That's what I'm saying.
He needs some basil to go with his scotch.
Exactly.
But it was interesting to see how impressed everyone was with food replicator technology, because in Star Trek, it's just walk over to the wall and ask for absolutely anything you want, and there it is. And they don't even think anything about it whatsoever. And it kind of reminds you of things that we take for granted now that we didn't have even 10 years ago. And now it's like we can't imagine that we never had a device in our pocket that I can sit here and type a message in and it just goes right over to you guys instantly on the other side of the world. And at the same time, I remember growing up with rotary dial phones, and when touch tone phones came, I was like, wow, we got a touch tone phone in the house. This is really cool.
And then it was, oh, I've got the phone that doesn't have a cord. This is awesome.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, what? What is this black magic?
It is black magic. And then there's the medical technology here. I liked that they started the episode with Reed kind of rehabilitating his leg and Phlox talking to him about the time that it takes to do the rehabilitation. Because then when they get on the station and they see this medical technology on there, it's even more amazing to them. And yet it's the same thing that Dr. Crusher would pull out and just scan over someone's leg.
Yeah.
Maybe O'Brien after he's injured himself rafting.
That's a really awesome kind of comparison they set up. There's a juxtaposition there of Phlox in the first 5 minutes treating Malcolm Reed with, you know, whatever those Regulan blood worms or whatever he's doing. And Reed is complaining. He's like, you still left one in me. And I'm just like, it'll find its way out eventually. And then in the space station's medical technology is this like beam generator. And, you know, it's just, it even repairs the scar. So it's so cool. I think that if I were aboard Enterprise, I would have been struck with wonder and joy at the sight of all this high technology. And they even say, you know, it's like, we could use one of these. We could use one of these. We could use this. Oh, God, my engineering staff would love this. You know, it's just it's interesting that they're not at a point of desperation yet where they're going to raid the space station. That's not even discussed. It's like the
speculation. Does Archer and his crew in their logs, do they report back to Starfleet after this and say, hey, there was this machine that makes food for you. There was this beam that repairs your leg. Why don't you guys get to work on that stuff?
That's a good question.
I think that comes after, you know, there's this space station that we blew up. We're pretty sure it's gone. But don't come near here and don't use that space station. It's not good.
Totally.
Yeah, but I think, you know, when it comes to the technology, they're all pretty excited about it in the same way that, you know, we're excited when something new and really revolutionary comes out. Like, you know, when the first cell phone came out and we just all kind of blown away. And, you know, we're all old enough on this podcast to know what that was like when you saw the first cell phone and it was huge and Zach Morris was holding it on the Saved by the Bell and you thought he was the coolest person ever, but it's the size of a brick, you know?
Yeah.
So
he needed two hands to hold it up.
Exactly.
He needed a purse to carry it.
Yeah.
He's got his man purse, you know, and right. He can also throw it through windows if he's trying to, you know, raid a house. So
right.
I think I missed that episode of Saved by the Bell.
It was right after the one where Jesse takes all the pills and she's just so excited
of course.
She's so scared.
I'm so scared. you know, before we get off of cell phones, it was so awesome because this is every time you watch Enterprise, of course, you get treated to the personal technology, right? And you see the communicators. And this was still at a point where cell phone technology was still, comparatively speaking, in the Zach Morris zone. We hadn't really gotten to the point where we had gotten as small as the Enterprise communicators. And right after this episode aired, like probably about a year or two after, is when we got to the really micro mobile phones. I mean, the Razor then came out and then it was like, this is ridiculous. 14 millimeters, you know. And so it was really cool to watch that happen all over again because we had seen cell phones surpass the original series in compactness. And then to finally see Enterprise's revised design overtaken was testament again to how quickly we were growing. And I thought that was pretty cool. And every time I see the Enterprise communicators, I just sigh a little, you know, gasp of desire because I always wanted one that worked.
Well, and they did that. What I like, too, is that the Enterprise pads, you know, they look a lot more kind of like an iPad does. You know, they have a couple of buttons on them so that it reminds me of basically like a old school Kindle with color, you know. And
yes.
They actually look pretty good, you know, and they seem to be able to hold a lot more data and kind of work in the way that like an iPad does. And so that's always fun to see that kind of stuff on screen. And, you know, this episode does such a great job of them all looking in awe at what their future is going to be like in the same way that we look in awe at Star Trek and see our future, you know. You get in the 60s and everybody wants a communicator. You know, they want to be like Kirk. They want to be able to flip it open and just talk to anybody, you know. Well, I can do that on my iPhone now, and my iPhone is way better than Kirk's communicator. In fact,
can't flip it open.
No, I can't flip it open.
No, you can. You got to get the communicator app, and visually you actually can flip it and it'll flip open.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing, though, right?
It ain't the same, brother.
Doesn't look as cool.
You've got to be able to flip it open, man. Are we going to have a communicator off? Can I get my Wrath of Khan communicator off? Yes!
Oh, man, why isn't my Enterprise communicator in here?
I know. That would really win.
You have to wait until Tuesday when the three different replicators that Matthew ordered from Diamond Select 2 years ago all arrive on the same day.
Yeah, it's been crazy at my house, but anyway.
He's gotten a couple of Enterprises, Michael, the past couple of weeks that he ordered years ago. Diamond Select decided to release them all at the same time. They all show up on his doorstep.
Oh, yeah, the Enterprise B is one of them, isn't it?
Enterprise B, E, and D all came to me. in the last, like, 3 weeks. Yeah.
My head is exploding. Can I ask you, but while we're off the rails here, just very briefly, can I ask you, is your Enterprise B one of the ones with the Excelsior decal?
It is. It says Excelsior on it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love that. That's so cool. I think that's authentic to the studio model, too, but we can keep talking about Enterprise. Any opportunity to talk about the Enterprise B, I'll take.
One of the things that I really thought was interesting about this episode is, one, you know, we get Roxanne Dawson, who's fantastic, and she directs this episode, and I think does a phenomenal job of creating, from the very beginning, that kind of eerie feeling. You know something's off, but you don't know how it's going to be off. And at the same time, she also does the voice of the automated customer service from hell. And I just really, I love her work here, and I think it's phenomenal. And what did you guys think?
Oh, I love her voice as the computer. She does a fantastic job. Now, of course, we had her voice a computer on Voyager, but it was supposed to be her in that case. You know, they explained that this is B'Elanna. She programmed the ship had a Cardassian computer voice, and she hated the voice, so she reprogrammed it to be her own voice in that episode.
Well, it was Dreadnought, right?
Yeah, in Dreadnought.
Yes, Dreadnought.
Yeah, yeah. I just rewatched that recently, and her computer voice.
And but so here cool. It's simply computer voice, and to be honest with you, the first time this came on, I didn't quite make the connection that it was Roxanne doing the voice. Because I'm used to her speaking with more passion and, you know, more lively as a Klingon, as B'Elanna. I think she did an amazing job here of presenting that computer voice that sounds like a natural voice, but the emotion is gone from it.
And it's interesting in terms of how that computer operated. Like, we didn't get to hear Roxanne say too much in the computer voice because it seemed to only have about 5 phrases pre-programmed. And of course, that's probably part of the philosophy of the thing. It's like the more it interacts with you, the less power it has. So like, no, I only get this and you pay me and then you go. That's all I understand. So leave. But I agree that Roxanne Dawson's direction definitely heightened all the creepy elements without sacrificing much in the way of clarity or anything. I always knew what was going on. It was very well put together. And I don't even mind her voicing the character in the episode because she does such a nice job. I think this was an all out win for her.
I just kept waiting for her to be like, I can't do that, Captain.
Little Hal action.
Exactly. Because that's what I felt like when I was in, you know, that it's just this austere white environment and everything's like pristine, and you know, you even the station itself that they go into is very pristine looking on the outside, you know, and so it has this wonderful 2001 kind of space odyssey look, and except that this is going to be more like space hell for them in a while, and we all know that, and we're just kind of waiting on the edge of our seat. You know, how is it going to happen? What's going to go wrong? Because I know something's about to go bad. So I just really enjoy that about this episode, that from the beginning, I know something is going to go wrong. I just want to know how it's going to go wrong and then what they're going to do to get out of it. Because Enterprise has been in a lot of scrapes recently on the show. And each time I'm left wondering, will they get out of it? You know, will maybe somebody die? Because that could happen. This is a prequel series. Who knows what they're going to do?
Okay, well, speaking of someone dying, and as we were talking about Roxanne, one more Voyager connection that I see here is that Travis gets to have his PDH moment. So Harry Kim is not on Enterprise, so they couldn't kill Harry. So instead, they killed Travis.
No great loss. Sorry.
Mario was not a Travis Mayweather fan.
Not really.
You know, Mariel, I totally get you. Because really, how can you be, right? We don't get to know him at all because he never says anything, right?
Yeah. When he does, it's not exactly the best or the brightest. So.
It is funny. He's like the Harry Kim of this show.
Right, except like you could tell Harry Kim was smart. Like Travis, I'm not sure that I would talk to Travis about much in terms of anything, just because he doesn't seem terribly intelligent all the time. I don't know. Well, maybe that's snobbery.
Travis is, well, I think, I don't know what they wanted to do with the character, really. You know, they set up that he's this boomer, that he was born in space on a ship. You know, I kind of get the feeling that he's a pilot. That's just what he is. And I imagine at this point, you know, the education at Starfleet Academy is probably quite different in the 22nd century than it is in the 24th century in terms of the types of scientific concepts and the technologies and the number of different things that an officer has to be able to do aboard the ship. We talked about on one of the shows recently that Starfleet officers in the 24th century, it seems like everyone can do everything. Oh, I know what it was. Matthew and I were talking about the DS9 relaunch novels. And Vaughn, who becomes the first officer of DS9, has an idea of how to detect shrouded Jem'Hadar, but he doesn't know how to do it technically, so he has to ask for help. But generally in Star Trek, everyone seems to be able to walk over to any panel and just do absolutely anything. They know everything. You know, the Academy trains them for everything. Where I kind of have the feeling in the 22nd century, it's not like that. You know, Hoshi's a linguist. She's not going to be able to fix the engines if something goes wrong. And Travis is a pilot. And he's a pilot because he grew up on spaceships and he was born in space. And so I just always kind of wonder what they could have done with him if they had actually written lines for him in the show. And maybe it was an opportunity with all the characters on the show to demonstrate how they are more like us. You know, we all have specializations that we're good at, and we're not necessarily good at other things.
Well, I think what they should have done is taken that scene where Hoshi comes in and she's talking about Travis and their relationship. They're great friends, obviously. You know, we see them eating in the mess hall all the time in the show together, having conversations with each other. You saw them in the mess hall talking in the station here in this episode. There's this great conversation that she has with the doctor talking about this prank that he had pulled on her the other day. This is what we should have been seeing on Enterprise all the time, because they're in deep space. They're not going to be running into planets all the time. They're not going that fast comparatively to, you know, the 24th century. These are the kind of things that they probably would do on this ship. It's much closer to us. So I'm imagining, you know, have this be a running thing. You know, you open the show and Hoshi walks in and she's hurried. She's thinking it's going to be horrible. And it turns out that, you know, he's pulled a prank on her. I mean, this is funny stuff. And it really helps grow that character of Travis, kind of making him that carefree, very fun, lighthearted guy that you would like more when he did talk, because you would kind of know him better. Yeah. But unfortunately, we don't really know him until he's dead.
But do it in a good way that's not too corny, like the way that Jadzia used to rearrange Odo's furniture.
Exactly. You
know, it's like
exactly.
Yeah.
It's a fun part of the story. You know, it's not like Hoshi goes to sit down on the bridge and there's a whoopee cushion in her chair and everyone cracks up laughing. You know, not like that. But yeah, but just build these character moments. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I'm just imagining that scene, you know, have her rushing into the decon chamber thinking that she's going to try and be saving a life, you know, and trying to figure out what this, you know, alien has to say. And it turns out, you know, it's strawberry gelatin. I mean, that's funny because it does build that suspense at the beginning of the episode. You think something really terrible is happening. Hoshi's got to save a life. And no, it's just strawberry gelatin. And with Travis laughing on the other side of the decon chamber with Dr. Phlox, I mean, that would just be a really funny thing to have them do, you know, and they just really don't do that with him ever. And, you know, we'll give all the lines to Trip or whoever else. So
as we're talking like about Starfleet, I think Chris made a point about Starfleet officers of the 24th century being sort of kind of overqualified and everything. And, you know, they're all well-rounded and they're also, with the exception of DS9, kind of squeaky clean. And you're very, very by the book. And that's obviously not the case in Enterprise. And what I like about this episode is it shows us people who are not afraid to bend the rules or to sneak around a little bit. And I know this wasn't necessarily in the outline, but as we're talking about Travis, I realize that we actually learn a lot more about Trip and Malcolm, in that, like, they're having the conversation over a meal in the recreational room, and they're like, and Trip's like, "Hey, I've been wanting to see this computer," and Malcolm's like, "Oh, what do you mean?" And they just, like, they look at the pad, and in very, very, very short order, Trip is able to talk Malcolm into poking around this space station. And I like that they get into trouble. And these are senior officers, and Archer says it. And he's like, you're supposed to be setting an example. You want some discipline, Malcolm? Here, fine. Get to your quarters. And then, but even in that, Archer even is like, but also, hold on, you're still in trouble, but did you see anything? Because I'm still suspicious about this space station, so I still want to know. I like that. I like that, seeing that side of this early Starfleet, where it's like, stop breaking. You're breaking. I know we all break. Okay, you're an idiot. You're punished. But also, I need to know this. So thank you for being a rogue, sort of. You know, that's cool. I like to see the rough edges a little bit.
Well, and I think one of the things that Enterprise really does well is bromances. You know, you have Archer and Trip, and then you have Reed and Trip, and they have their friendships, and you can see those moments where these guys are really friends, you know. And just that scene at the table, Michael, you're right, when Reed pulls that pad back from him and he's like, okay, where is this now? I mean, it's just this is the kind of thing. Or you know, you mentioned that great moment between Archer and Trip at the beginning about Oz getting around to it, you know. I mean, that's just fantastic. It's such a great moment, because it's those kind of little character moments that really help you begin to love the characters. And Enterprise was good at doing that with some of its characters. You know, Archer, T'Pol, Reed, Trip, Phlox, they're all the ones that are going to get the majority of the play. And that's really why I love this show, because I love those four characters. To me, they're fantastic.
I noticed that your bromance examples all involved Trip.
Well, he's magical.
Yeah. Isn't it obvious?
Trip, he also got to have a Kirk moment in here a bit, I thought. You know, Kirk liked to talk computers to death until they exploded. And Trip, he doesn't exactly try to talk the station to death, but he does try to really, really annoy and confuse the station to distract it while they set their escape plan into motion. And it's like, how do I know these pins from the nacelles won't just fly off backwards when I punch it?
These ain't up to Starfleet spec.
How do we know? How do we know it's going to be okay when Archer tells Mayweather to punch it? How do we know we're not going to fly into a million pieces? Yeah,
I like that. So this space station is so advanced, they're marveling at the technology, and then he tells it, "This ain't up to Starfleet spec."
Yeah. We do things a little better.
Well, and it was so funny, because that's such a classic Trip thing. He just, you know, they just let him run, you know, and just Trip start running your mouth, and he's really good at that. And so they got the exact right person on the ship to be able to do it. And yeah, it's that kind of like Kirk moment. I'm just going to keep talking until this thing is confused. It doesn't know what's going on. And then I'm going to run.
I also like that he knows when to quit too, because when the plan is in action and what is the cue? Actually, I've forgotten now. I'm having a brain problem. Like when he knows it's time to quit and run, he's busy yelling at the thing about guarantee and asking about the pins. And then the crew implements some kind of, the plan reaches some vital phase, and he's like, "All right, well, I guess you got worse problems to attend to right now, so I'm gonna take off." Just like bails because the TV retracts. And I think when the TV goes behind the door, you know, to get out of the angry space station's room.
Michael, you mentioned when we were talking about the character development there, the discussion between Trip and Reed as they're eating, and Trip's talking about the computer. You know, he says, our computer is the most advanced in the fleet, and it's three stories high, and where's this computer? And Mariel pointed out that, you know, that is a setup for the ending, when we discover that the station is actually abducting individuals and tying their brains in and basically using biological brains to power the station, which of course is an interesting concept, but I also wonder scientifically how that works. They're getting this brain power from all these different races. But I thought it was an it was a nice little setup for that that was very subtle at the time. And then when you get to the end, then you realize, Trip was wondering what's powering the station.
Yeah, this is a smart episode, and it's just really well written. You know, we talked about the fact that it takes continuity into aspect really well, but also it follows kind of that action movie motif that you don't show anything or ask a question that's not going to play into the film, that's not going to not play into the film later. And so all the questions that they ask, you know, Archer asks, who built this and why aren't, what's going on? This seems really weird. Well, we're at least going to get some of the answers to that. You know, you get the answer to what's powering this because it has to be a computer of immense size or something that we haven't even conceived of yet. And I just like how they set all that up, and it gives you that just eerie feeling the whole time.
And that's compounded by the distinction in the brain chamber also. Like, yes, the customer-facing areas of the station are white and sterile and friendly to a degree. But then you get into, like, the ventilation ducts and things. Okay, whatever. They get a little weird. But then you go into the computer room with all the... And it's not just the corpses. Like, this place is a dingy, dark, zombie basement. And it's creepy as hell. I mean, like, that's... It really helps solidify that, yes, we knew there was something off about this place the whole time, but no, this is legitimately a really nasty place. And everyone in here has been in here for so long that they have irreparable brain damage, so we cannot fix them. And that's when I think that does a nice job of setting up the justification to blow the place to hell, which is, of course, what they do.
Maybe there should have been, like, one IT guy back there sitting at a desk.
It'd be like the Swan Station on Lost. Just one guy pressing a button.
What did you think about all this, Mario?
Creepy. I think Matt said it was kind of like horror film. I would agree with that. It was just the juxtaposition of, like Michael said, the sterile white and then just gross.
Yeah. What's going on behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Yeah, they did it better throughout the episode here, I think, that kind of horror film creepy nature. You know, they tried it a little bit in Regeneration at the beginning, having a kind of a horror film motif when they find the Borg. But then the episode goes in a more traditional way, I think, from that point. But this one really was creepy throughout in that kind of way that keeps you engaged all the way through.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and it does make me wonder, you know, who in the world did build the station? What is it there for? What do they get out of it? You know, I mean, is the station just asking for things that it needs to sustain itself? I mean, not only is it taking people, but, you know, the warp injectors and the plasma, and are those all things that it's needing, you know, just to keep itself sustained? I mean, why would anybody build this, or do they come and get these things? I mean, raised all those questions. Is it something that's, you know, would have been great if Enterprise had gotten a chance to maybe answer down the road. But even if it's just a mystery, it still is a good mystery to leave you with.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wondered, right? Because one thing that it reminded me of course, seeing everyone attached to these hoses and all the way they were, reminded me of the scene in Caretaker on Voyager when Harry and B'Elanna get abducted. But it also, in Enterprise, reminded me in the first season, one of the very first episodes in Fight or Flight, when they find that ship and all the aliens are strung upside down. And in that case, whoever was doing that, they were trying to collect triglobulin, which I guess is some kind of blood compound.
You don't know
from
triglobulin?
The aliens.
Yeah, man, they were you don't have it. You don't have triglobulin.
I don't. No, I got it. Unfortunately, I didn't get upgraded to try. Globulin yet.
You got low T.
That transfusion soon. I just got to find a few aliens to get it from first. But in that case, those aliens that were doing that, they had some purpose. You know, they're collecting this triglobulin. But here, it seems that they're simply using the brain power to power this repair station. But why? There has to be something more to it than that, and we don't really ever know what that is.
And the theory that jumps to my mind is that the repair station was at one point designed to be a legitimate repair station by a race that used it. And then something happened to that species, and the station managed to evolve and to find a way to keep itself self-sufficient. You know, we have no idea what kind of... We've seen some very powerful computers in Star Trek's time, not just from Starfleet, but from other races. So if this station's intelligence were to go awry, that would be very interesting.
Yeah, it's like, that makes sense. That, yeah, that could be... It just... it's like the robots on Voyager who were designed to fight the war, and then the races were both destroyed, and then but they just kind of keep going on their own. So maybe the station here just keeps going on its own, and yeah. And maybe the artificial intelligence has evolved to the point where it does feel some need for self-preservation, and it knows that it has to have fresh brain power, and so it attracts spacefarers to it for that purpose. But it seemed to like really select Travis for some reason, because it could have taken anybody.
He's the dumbest one on the ship.
Well, there was a lot of his brain that just wasn't being used, and he was gonna be able to last a really long time because he had a lot of untapped potential,
right?
And that's really why he was chosen. Plus, he's right. Physically fit, and that really helps.
They look to see which crew member was doing the least. And, well, they won't miss right. This guy, so I'll take him.
Matthew, how do you know that he was physically fit? I mean, did the show, like, show us, like, with a really long pan shot or something?
You didn't see... there's other scenes where Travis is, you know... You didn't see the scene where he was getting dressed in his quarters when Archer calls? The man's pretty fit.
That was very subtle, man. I don't know what you mean. Like, I mean, it was maybe, you know, it was like a minute tops of just shirtless Mayweather time. I don't know.
I can't even say about, that I bro. Noticed. I mean,
wait. My
shut
God,
up, all was, of you.
This, the whole living room, like at my place, when we're watching this, was I was watching it with my girlfriend and my other female roommate, and it was like, hello. And like, everything stopped, and I was like, yes, Travis Mayweather.
I think Matthew was wondering why Alice Eve is not in this episode.
Yeah, I really was. You know, if you're going to have anybody in their underwear, it needs to be my new favorite Star Trek character ever, Carol Marcus. So I need more Carol Marcus in more Star Trek episodes. In fact, maybe you could just replace her in like the special editions of, you know, Enterprise, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Next Generation. Yeah. Let's
just
get that
replace
to
random characters
yeah,
with Dr.
Exactly.
Carol Marcus as portrayed by Alice Eve. and would she always be in her underwear as she is in the latest trailer for Into Darkness?
Chris, we're not here to objectify women like that. Come on.
You've been talking about this. This. How long is it on screen? Like a half a second in the trailer?
Not even.
And it's gotten, if you go to websites, that's the still that they have for the news article about the new trailer.
JJ knows how to market a film. I mean, he knows what's going to get people in, and you put that scene in there and you're going to get people into the film. That's definitely not all I was paying attention to. That was a great trailer. So, and we talked about it, Chris. We already talked about it on, you know, the news section, so we don't have to talk about it anymore.
All right. So we get, this reminds me, when we get to the end here, they finally, you know, they manage their escape, and this episode was actually nominated for an Emmy, I believe, for visual effects in a TV series, which I can definitely see. Not only the repairs of the ship, which are fantastically done, but especially the ending with the explosion sequences. I think one opportunity that they missed here, though, is that as the Enterprise is flying away from the exploding station, the entire ship really should have done a barrel roll.
Oh, that would have been fantastic. Just have to flip it somehow. Oh, yes, Travis has to flip with a barrel roll so that the arm, you know, finally dislodges from, the saucer section. Would have been fantastic.
Because that's how you escape from danger.
Naturally. He'd have to access the manual control column, though. He'd have to get Commander Riker aboard to stand in a manly fashion and drive the ship with a joystick. Yes.
You know, we were watching on television the other day, and they were showing, it was a a show about some problems with, I think it was Airbus A300, something like that. I can't remember the exact model of the airplane, but it's this like super large airplane. But I was thinking about you, Michael, because they showed that in this particular design of airplane, the traditional yoke has been replaced by a joystick.
A joystick, sure.
Just like Riker used to fly the Enterprise-E in Insurrection.
Absolutely. It's the only way to do it. It's where we're going to do it in 400 years. You might as well get on it now.
Just do it now.
I was really sad, though, in this episode that we didn't see an Andorian in the bay with all the aliens and that he hadn't put up a really good fight.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
I was really disappointed. There was no Andorian fight scene in this episode, and I couldn't believe it.
It's a real missed opportunity because not only would it have been an Andorian fight scene, it would have been a zombie Andorian fight scene, and that's, you really can't top that.
Absolutely. No, I'm taking away several points just for that.
So we've been talking about Dead Stop for about an hour, so why don't we wrap up with our final thoughts, and there's one topic that we didn't talk about. So just briefly, I wanted to mention, well, we did mention that the station is repairing itself at the end. And I do kind of wonder if maybe there was at least a little thought that either this station or the race that built the station might somehow return later on in the series. Because it is very eerie at the end when you think that station has completely exploded and now it just goes right to work to start repairing itself. It's kind of like Borg technology in a sense there, the way a Borg cube just regenerates itself.
Yeah, it was definitely creep factor 10, and it suggested a decentralized intelligence in addition to the brain basement, and that's super creepy also, and it would have been very nice to see this station return, and I think that they, sometimes I think that there was a little bit of pragmatism among the writing staff where they were like, you know, leaving themselves an open for one of those slow weeks in the season six that never came where it's like, guys, I don't have any ideas. Do you just want to do the zombie station again? Can we find a way to, okay, yeah, let's just do this, you know, like, cause that's what I would have done. I think it was a really smart thing to leave themselves a door. And we know Star Trek doesn't always take advantage of that opportunity, but I would have loved to see these guys come back.
Yeah. So what are your final thoughts on Dead Stop, Michael?
I think, I kind of prematurely wrapped it up in the beginning of the episode, but I will just say again that I like it when, though this one was not completely messageless, I agree. I think it was lighter fare, which demonstrated a lot of the good storytelling that Star Trek can do and a lot of the good that we didn't see for a long time in Enterprise. And we eventually started seeing toward the end of the series when, of course, it was too late. But back when this aired, this is the kind of episode that kept me watching every week. And that is why I will always remember it. And I will frequently rewatch this episode just because it's so well done all around. And I give it 8 out of 10 liters of warp plasma.
Excellent. How about you, Matthew?
I'm really with Michael on this one. You know, I love this episode because every time I watch it, I have a great time watching it. I really like how the characters kind of react to things. I like that so few things are kind of flipped on their head. This is the episode where Archer's skepticism about the universe is really starting to creep in, and it's shown really well. And T'Pol is kind of on the other side, just being, you know, very logical and saying, look, we don't have a choice. It doesn't matter if this is creepy. You know, we don't have a choice. And so I really liked that as well. There's a lot of great character moments in here. You know, Hoshi is somebody who doesn't get a lot of screen time a lot of the episodes, but here she has a wonderful scene, I thought, with Phlox talking about, you know, her friend who's died and, you know, seeing a dead body of a friend like that the first time. And this is a great episode. It really shows, I think, what Enterprise can excel at. Like you said, Michael, it's a little bit lighter fare, but at the same time, it's just quality all around. And on top of that, you know, Chris, you said, you know, this got nominated for an Emmy. It should have won. This is fantastic work in special effects, especially for the time period. And it still holds up. I'm watching it in HD and Netflix, and it looks fantastic. And so this episode is something I will continue to keep going back to because I really just enjoy seeing these characters kind of at their best. And I will give this 9 out of 10 pan-fried catfish.
Excellent. How about you, Mariel?
Well, I really like this episode. I think, honestly, it's one of the better written episodes. With all the threads that are being woven throughout, we get a lot of foreshadowing of some issues early on in the episode. There's a lot of juxtaposition with characters. I mean, you get the suspicious of Archer, and then you've got the curiosity of Trip, and kind of how they both approach the station and how they see it. And I think one of the only things I would complain about is being told that Hoshi and Travis have this friendship. But I mean, that's not really the fault of this episode. That's something we should have been shown before.
Being told but not seeing it, you mean?
Exactly. That's a very bad writing with that. But that's not really the fault of this episode. So I really think it's definitely shows what the potential could have been for this series had they tapped into that a little more.
Definitely. Well, I love this episode because it has that sense of the unknown that I think Enterprise needed to have and did pretty well, as I said, through the first season. But this one was especially well done. It really was that true creep factor. Not only was it this strange unknown space station built by a race who we've still don't know who built it, but the technology is so advanced, and then you find that it has malicious intent, which you kind of suspect. I mean, it's going to repair your entire ship in no time for basically no payment, because the payment options were just ridiculously trivial. Again, great character development, as we've pointed out all through here. And wonderful direction by Roxanne Dawson. She always does a great job. It's just, I think, really good science fiction. It's one of those stories. I don't know if you can't completely take the Star Trek out of this story, but you could certainly take the Star Trek elements of this story and just change the terminology. And this would work perfectly well as any science fiction story. So it's not really reliant on Star Trek. And so one of my favorites from season 2 for sure. And I'm going to give this episode 9 isolytic shocks. All right. Well, before we go, Mariel, tell everyone where they can find you around the internets.
I'm on Twitter at AFloridaGirl. Each word is spaced by an underscore. And that's about it.
That's about it. And you write the news for Trek FM, of course.
Yes, I do write the news for Trek FM. Check it out. I do a roundup every week, as well as the occasional feature. So check back.
Excellent. And Mr. Michael Fisher, where can people go if they want to see you chomping a cigar as you tap away on one of your 18 different cell phones that you carry on your person?
My multitude of mobile devices. If you want to hear from me in slightly less broken sentences with exponentially fewer us, you can find me on Twitter at Captain2Phones. It's Captain, the number 2, phones, where I mainly talk about mobile technology, or at Fats Rikerbeard, where I mainly don't talk.
You mainly don't talk these days, right?
Right.
Well, thanks for joining us today, guys. It was a lot of fun to talk about Dead Stop.
Chris, that was a fantastic episode getting to talk with Michael and then, of course, Mariel for her very first podcast ever about Dead Stop. And really just, I think, one of the crown jewels of Enterprise Season 2, just production-wise and story-wise, character-wise, this is a fantastic episode.
Yeah, really fun episode. Really great science fiction, as I was saying in my final thoughts. And it would have been fun to see the station come back or use this as a setup for some interaction between Starfleet and this very advanced alien race down the road. But unfortunately, we only got 4 seasons, so we'll never know. I think Michael's onto something, though, when he says that, yeah, this could have been one of those openings where they needed a story down the road. It's something they could have looped back into. And that's smart writing.
Definitely. And, you know, kind of leaving yourself little ins and outs in episodes is really important. And I think you can kind of see that when you might like read somebody like Tolkien, who at the beginning didn't know where he was going. And you can kind of tell. And then as he starts creating all these things, it really starts to flow together. And I feel like a lot of Star Trek series are like that. You know, the first season and the second season, you're kind of feeling things out, trying to figure it out to where you're going to go. And you've kind of created some doors you're going to want to keep opening and some doors you're just going to shut. And this is one that could have stayed shut, you know, even if they went seven seasons. But I definitely would have loved to run into the species who made this station, because I think it would have been really freaky to run into them.
Yeah, sounds like a good idea for a novel.
Yeah,
I don't think this has been explored. We haven't had that many Enterprise novels, really. So
yeah, who knows?
Could be a good idea. Well, let's tell everyone where to find us if they'd like to share their thoughts on Dead Stop, on Enterprise, or anything we talked about in news today. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room, and that will come to us by email. You can also go to our forums at trek.fm/forums if you'd like to have a longer discussion. There is a section there for the Ready Room. There's also one for Enterprise, and a lot of listeners are there interacting with one another, so come join us there. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, where we play a lot of different games with our followers there. And you can find us on Twitter under username trekfm. And Matthew, what if people want to find you personally?
Well, I am on Trek FM. I do the book reviews as well as Literary Treks and The Orb with you. And then, of course, I'm on Twitter at MattRushing02, trying to tweet about all sorts of things to whatever kind of comes into my head some days. And of course, talking Star Trek and big Into Darkness news last week. And so very excited as that film comes out. And I'll actually be going to see it here in the States on the Wednesday before it comes out. So spoiler alert for my Twitter feed, I may be live tweeting the movie. Just kidding. I'm not going to be that guy in the theater. But yeah, it's a good time. And so if you follow me, let me know with an at reply, and hopefully we'll be able to have a great conversation. Chris, where can we find you around the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter. My username is C Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And, you know, some people call me Brian, which I guess I set myself up for. It's actually my middle name. But it's a username that I've been able to always get everywhere, and so I've stuck with it, so it's kind of become my identity there. But that's C. Brian Jones, Brian with a Y, and you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. And you know, I'm typically, of course, I tweet about Star Trek. I tweet about my life couched in Star Trek references sometimes. A lot of music lyrics, art, design, Japan, college football. So just, yeah, give me a follow, send me a net reply, and say hello. And we'd also like to invite you to check out our sponsor, Squarespace. I promise you, Squarespace is truly the quickest and easiest way to create a blog or a professional website or a store. I've been a longtime Squarespace user, long before they ever became a sponsor of Trek FM. I guarantee you, you'll love it. Go check them out. Try it free for 14 days, no credit card required. Pricing is fantastic. $8, $16, $24 for the standard, unlimited, and business. And you can use offer code TREK3 to get 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. And the way you do that is you go to squarespace.com/trek. That's squarespace.com/trek. Offer code TREK3, and you'll be supporting our sponsor, and you'll be helping us bring you this programming all at the same time. So, Matthew, looks like another Ready Room is done, and it's 11:48 a.m. for me, which means it's almost lunchtime. I really got to go have some pan-fried catfish.
Well, Chris, it looks like it's time to stick a zombie alien brain in it, because the Ready Room is done.
Making their way, the only way they know how. Mama loved me, but
you don't understand. They keep a show in my hands and not my face on TV.